From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
All right, tonight's show is going out to Greek President Alexis Tsipras, who at the time of broadcast, that being the 2nd of July for episode 76...
Well done.
Appears to be playing some kind of giant game of diplomacy, but with, like, real pieces.
Actually, I think it's more like Monopoly, and he's about to go to jail, actually.
I've got to admire his strategy, because he's saying he doesn't want to take any more cash from the Eurozone, except for that cash that he's prepared to take. And he doesn't want any more austerity measures, except for those that he's prepared to consider. And at the same time, he's bringing all of Western civilization to the brink of destruction. Hats off to you, Alexis. Hats off. That's what you get for having a girl's name, I suppose.
Well, it's also probably okay. How he rose to the top.
This is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I'm Trent.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Garth.
And coming up this week, we have a special episode of What We've Been Playing, where we contrast and compare Suburbia versus Castles of Mad King Ludwig, both Mensa Select games. We're also going to talk about the recently announced Dice Tower Awards. We're going to talk about all the board game news that's fit to be half-assed researched. We're going to have a mini book review, something new for us. And we're going to talk about our epic competition coming at ya!
We actually have some really good prizes to give away.
Yeah. Do we ever?
Very exciting.
Almost
as exciting as this new track from The Refused. How did a Swedish punk band put out a song that sounds like Van Halen? I don't know. This is War on the Palaces from the new album. Check it out. If you don't know who The Refused are or why it's important that they're back, well, I'm sorry for your loss, but there it is. It's a song called War on the Palaces on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are the Dice Men, and this is a show called The Dice Men Cometh. We talk tabletop games of all things, and we do this around about this time every Thursday on this radio station.
On a pretty regular basis.
And we normally start the show with what we've been playing lately, and I suppose we are doing that tonight, but we're going to do it a little bit differently. Mark, can you explain?
Yeah, so we talked last time about Castles of Mad King Ludwig, and it's sort of, we had a bit of a debate about whether we preferred that one or Suburbia, and...
Because they're both by the same designer.
That's right, both by Ted Ausbach, Bezier Games, both Mensa Select games.
The same mechanics as well.
Well, they have a lot in common, let's say, you know. We're going to agree to disagree on some of those bits. But then, of course, we hadn't played Suburbia for quite some time. So, the other night, we pulled out Suburbia, and we played that one as well.
We did.
In the interest of making a direct comparison between these two gaming juggernauts.
Well, to keep all our high school teachers happy, we had to compare and contrast. Surely that's what we had to do in every assignment you had to write about in English.
Two Mensa games enter.
So, anyway, Suburbia. Now, we did talk about Castles last week, but Suburbia. So, it's by Ted Ausbach, so he's obviously a very, very, very well-known designer, done a lot of things. Currently... One Night Revolution, which is a sort of a coup version that's been successfully kickstarted, of which I'm a backer, and hopefully I will get some version of that game in the next couple of years. So, Suburbia, it was released in 2012, so it's already 3 years old.
Yeah.
Probably took about a year to get to Australia, but, you know, it's already been out there in the marketplace for a while.
Isn't it funny how that already feels like ancient history these days as well?
Definitely. So, yeah. Now, it plays 1-4, so you can do a solo mode, Mark.
No.
If Pathfinder solo mode doesn't, you know, doesn't scratch that itch long enough.
There's just not enough room in the toilet for all those cards.
But look, as we've said numerous times before, it's SimCity the game. Basically, each player is attempting to have the highest population at the end of the game. Now, everyone starts with an identical city tableau, which just has one suburb, one community park, and one heavy factory, $15 million, and a marketplace where you just want to buy and buy and buy some more real estate. Very similarly to Castles, there are some public end-of-game goals where everyone knows, we're going to win if we have the most number of lakes, or we're going to have the most industry, or something like that. But then everyone gets dealt secretly two goals. You get to choose one, you hand one back, and they become your private goals that you want to try and achieve at the end of the game.
And all of this looks like these beautiful little symmetrical hexagonal tiles with a sort of very similar graphic design across all of them, unlike the mess of Mad King Ludwig.
Exactly right. And look, The turn, once you've had your first turn, it's very, very simple, because all you're doing is you're buying a tile. You're paying the cost on the real estate market, which goes anywhere from nothing up to $10, depending on how far along the chain of seven tiles it is. You then adjust your income. You adjust your reputation. You see if any of your other players have tiles that impact you. And then at the end of the game, at the end of your turn, you collect your revenue and you move on, and that's it. It's really simple.
It is.
And
it is.
Let's start the comparison. What I loved about playing this only a couple of days ago was how quick the turns moved in comparison to the slow pace of Castles, where that master builder mechanic of adjusting every building everywhere along the sliding scale of value just slowed that game down a lot.
You certainly have the ability to look forward and to plan, because you know all except one or two of those buildings are going to be out there. You've got a pretty good idea about how much they're going to cost, because they're going to slide down one or two slots. So you can do that forward thinking to decide what's going to combo best, where you can put it, what I'd like to stop you from getting, because that'll be more advantageous for you. Whereas one of the issues with the Castles of Madkin Ludwig is you can't plan ahead, because firstly, you don't know if that room is even going to be there next time, because only three or four of them are going to be. Then you'd have no idea what it's going to cost, because it could go from 1,000 this turn to 15,000 next turn.
Yep.
So yeah, you're certainly right in that. In terms of forward thinking and in terms then of quick turns, Suburbia, you're definitely able to plan ahead.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's a massive benefit, because we spent so much time just going, ugh, with Castles. I can't have any impact on what my turn's going to be. I've got to wait for everyone else to have a go. I've got to wait to see what the Master Builder does. I'll just twiddle my thumbs for a bit.
And look, I think one more tick in the Suburbia box is that interplay between the, let's call them suburbs, where if I have, as I did the other night, I had a tile, or in fact I had two tiles that said every time someone places the green ones, the
suburb
living areas, that I get money. So there is that, and there's a few different ones of those. So there's that interplay between players that also you don't get in Castles of Madkin Ludwig, because the only real interplay there is you interacting with the market and whether someone else wants the room that you want.
It sounds like we're going to come down on the side of Suburbia.
No.
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 Well, look, before we get there...
Well, Trent, you've been quite quiet. Do you want to sort of dip your toe into the argument for the correct Suburbia side or the incorrect Castle side that Mark is erroneously talking about?
In the interests of full disclosure, I've only played one game of Castles of Madkin Ludwig, all right, which is not enough to base my judgment on, frankly, and I own Suburbia, so therefore I have a vested interest in justifying my own purchase to myself. But to me, Suburbia just feels like more game, and I said this on the show last week. But I suppose this is both good and bad, because it's good if you're looking for more flexibility in the gameplay and more choices, and I would argue more satisfaction. But it's bad if you hate bookkeeping and tracking various effects, because there's a lot more of that. Suburbia is definitely a more fiddly game.
Yeah, it is, and I think I tip my hat again, as I said last week, to the Suburbia app, because that just makes it a brilliant implementation on your iDevices. But in terms of getting around to the table, I think after you've played that one round, it moves pretty quickly. You can all sort of chime in and say, oh, your population's done this, or your reputation's done this, or it does work.
Garth, only intellectual midgets use the apps. There, I've said it! I've been wanting to say that for weeks.
Well, the other thing is you're relying on the other player's honesty, because we did have a few times where, oh, you forgot to add the X for the combo thingy, which, you know, we all do because we're very honest people.
Well, there was Trent who just happened to increase his reputation by two because he said it should have happened a round or two ago.
Right.
And look, we believe you, Trent. We believe you. We didn't even make you take a take backsy.
It wasn't a take backsy. It was a
mess upsy.
An F upsy.
Yes. Okay. Now, one thing. So I do like the hexagons and how they all fit together and look very uniform. What I don't like, even though I love them in principle and the effect of them, are those edge tiles, the rivers. Yeah, the borders.
Oh, no, the borders are one of my favourite things about it.
Don't get me wrong. I really like the borders. I don't like the visual impact of them.
Well, see,
because they mess up the whole symmetry.
This is the Suburbia layout expansion, which puts different shapes. I love these. I think there should be more different shapes, but then I don't like all the different shapes of Mad King Ludwig. So I don't know what I want.
Well, look, I want to come back to something that I did bring up last week, which was that sort of that extra level in castles that I think as a beginner player you don't get to, which is the comboing of closing off rooms, getting to take another turn or to do one of those closing off rooms bonus, with that, which then enables you to do another thing, and you can get those real combos going. And I think that is an advanced level of play that you don't see with just one or two plays.
Okay, well, my concern with that is that when we did play it, it seemed to be you needed to get a lot of hallways, you needed to get a lot of stairs and all that kind of thing, which isn't very interesting for me. I'd much rather try and work on the rooms. And the fact that you have the Master Builder shuffling up all the rooms every single round means you've also got to focus on having a lot of money. So it's a double-edged sword. It might be that it's more complicated, or it might be that it's more fiddly, or it's more that, I don't know, I just feel less in control with castles.
Yeah.
I also think that the with the Master Builder mechanic in castles, it's going to suffer as a two-player game, where Suburbia is awesome as a two-player game.
Yeah, and I think coming back to that Master Builder mechanic, again, that is, I think, a love-it-hate-it thing, where I loved the concept of it, where it's really a huge mathy problem to work out what's the maximum amount of money I can get for these rooms, because I really need it because it's the only way to get money. But I haven't solved that problem, having played a couple of times. I could not get my head around what's the right price to charge.
So in summary, I'm for Suburbia.
I'm from Suburbia too.
I want to have a foot in each camp because I think they scratched... For me, they scratched different itches.
Is that itch still
not
cured?
Yeah, I'm still itchy. They scratched different itches, and I think, you know, one is the town planner, which is very much looking down and hexagons and neat and tidy. The other one is the architect of all this sort of sprawling stuff and how it comes together.
How about a better question? If you own one, do you need the other?
Oh, gee, I don't know. See, for me, they both do something different. Although, who's got enough time to play all the games they have anyway?
If I have 2 hours, I'm going to choose Suburbia because I feel like I've got more game out of that 2 hours. I feel like I've been invested in more of the turns. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've been involved in more of it than Castles. Look, that's just my feeling.
I think we need to get a couple more games of Castles in to be able to make a fair comparison. But I'm definitely one foot in each camp.
Well, I definitely think that we've thrashed the guts out of that topic.
You don't want to talk about it again next week?
How about we talk about something new? I got some game news.
All right.
All right, we'll do that next. That's coming up on the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, with a song that sounds like this.
Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, we are with the Dice Men Cometh, Trent, Mark and Garth, and that was Pitt the Elder, not the British Prime Minister, but a band, believe it or not, with Always Waiting. Now, speaking of Always Waiting, Trent.
Oh, please. Cheap. Cheap and nasty. And completely valid. Fitting for you, Mark. And I believe that was Pitt the Younger.
The Prime Minister?
Wasn't it?
They had both.
Oh,
they were both Prime Ministers. Haven't you watched Blackadder?
I bow to your superior
intellect.
Age. Okay, it is time for gaming news. Hasbro, the gaming global juggernaut company, has released the rather clumsily entitled Magic: The Gathering Arena of the Planeswalkers into the wild. Or at the very least, they've released it into a few select US hobby stores for sort of demonstration and ordering purposes. We'll probably have to wait until August to see it in this country at the earliest. Let's be blunt. This is Heroescape redeployed with a Magic skin.
Oh, really?
That's exactly what it is. It's Magic with minis and a hex-based board.
Magic clicks.
It's a five-player game. You're summoning armies and casting spells and fighting each other. It's entirely self-contained.
Oh.
For now.
Yes, that's right.
And it doesn't use regular Magic cards.
And you'll never be able to purchase boosters.
No,
for sure.
No. Never, ever, no. Because this game won't be a hit at all. But yeah, look out for it. new starter set coming out for the skirmish minigame Malifaux, and this is something that, Mark, I know had caught your eye.
Yes.
The theme of Malifaux is kind of gothic swamp.
Victorian gothic swamp western horror.
Yeah. Weird Miniatures will be putting out a new starter set for it next month. It's a skirmish level game, which means you there's less of a barrier to entry. You need less miniatures to play. There's some card play involved with this as well, and an entirely separate RPG that you don't need to get into at all if you just enjoy the miniatures. So there you go, Malifaux. And in fact, speaking of weird minis, they are also branching into board games in a big way, working with arguably one of the highest profile designers in the entire hobby, Kevin Wilson.
Wow. Yes. Okay.
Who gave us Arkham Horror and Descent from Fantasy Flight. And this very much looks like a Fantasy Flight game. It's going to be called Darkness Comes Rattling.
Ooh.
In September it comes out. It's a co-op which sees players as heroes competing quests, working against some kind of timing mechanism before the sun swallowed by a giant snake.
Right.
There's some kind of corruption mechanic going on in it. It looks really big, like a Kevin Wilson game should.
Because he also did Android, didn't he?
I believe he did.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah, he knows how to do a big, complicated game.
But it doesn't look too big.
Okay.
There might be just a little bit of restraint keeping in. Lots of hidden cards. Not too much information out about it, except that title, Darkness Comes Rattling. Now, speaking of too big, there's a new entry into Kickstarter's top 10 biggest tabletop games ever.
Mm.
Would it surprise you to learn that it's another mini game?
No, does it start with a Z or a Z?
Well, it's from Dwarven Forge.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, okay. They've got a couple in there now. In fact, they've got three in there. It's a series of miniatures that they market them as being manufactured with dwarvenite. which is some kind of proprietary brand special grade of plastic that's meant to withstand rough treatment or something. But it's called the City Builder System from Dwarven Forge, and it's raised $2,359,260 from 2,719 backers. So Dwarven Forge now have three games in Kickstarter's top 10.
Wow.
This latest one has actually raised more money from less backers than their previous campaigns. There's also another new entry, Zombicide, the Black Plague, cracked the top 10 as well.
Mm-hmm.
But look, all of them are being dwarfed by the mighty
782,571
raised by Exploding Kittens.
Oh, and it's going to ship soon.
Which is still the, well, I mean, there's that, there's Daylight, and then there's everything else. It's still the number one board game, tabletop game on Kickstarter.
Yeah, for a deck of cards.
Yeah.
$8 million for a deck of cards.
Yep.
Amazing.
Just caught that zeitgeist.
But it's the oatmeal.
Yeah, it is.
Whole bunch of new stuff coming out from Z-Man Games. I mean, look, obviously, Gen Con and the German one whose name is suddenly escaping.
Essen,
thank you. has only the biggest board gaming fair in the world that I suddenly forgot the name of.
Did we mention the news was half-assed?
These are coming up. So all the new releases are being planned, and Z-Man have announced a bunch of stuff, including a game with there's some great dumb titles coming up here. Apocalypse Chaos. It's a modular... Would it surprise you to learn that it's a modular, scenario-based co-op sci-fi survival game?
Right.
Code of Nine. This actually looks a little bit more interesting. This is a Japanese game which looks a little bit like Tragedy Looper.
Oh, yeah.
Except the players are androids in a sort of post-human world trying to deduct what happened to humanity.
Ooh.
And there's multiple scenarios and it plays out multiple different ways, apparently. There's not just one solution, so it's got some replayability about it. There's a Tragedy to Looper expansion coming out as well. Now, we haven't played this Tragedy to Looper.
Yeah,
this is the time travel game where there are tragedies that people have to try and undo in various scenarios, and they have to go back in time and just do the events again and again and again.
Yeah, actually, I'm really hoping to hit up a couple of our Melbourne-based listeners who might be travelling south for a certain game convention to see if I can get a game of that one, because I'd really like to try it.
And more about that game convention soon. So Tragedy Looper, the expansion, with a whole bunch of new Tragedy scripts coming out soon. Voyages of Marco Polo should be coming more available through Z-Man shortly, and in English, which is a bonus. And speaking of stupid names, a game called Dragon Farkle. F-A-R-K-L-E, if anyone was wondering. Okay, a couple more. Do you want to play test some new rules to the Pathfinder RPG?
No,
you don't? Well, look, if you do, get onto the Paizo website and look for Ultimate Intrigue, because a playtest is open. And we got some more news on the Kingdom Builder Kickstarter.
Yeah, we do.
And the controversy around that.
Because last week you were talking about how the Queen Games and the designer just couldn't come to an arrangement.
Donald
and...
X. Vaccarino claimed he hadn't been paid since prior to 2014, despite Queen Games trying to launch a Kickstarter called Marshlands.
Exactly right. And Queen Games saying, we're trying to pay, but we've lost your bank account details. Yeah, I think we've all tried that one. But look, the 30 June deadline passed and the Kickstarter has been pulled, although it was incredibly successful. So it's not happening.
Apparently the reason that it was pulled, because it was in the contract that they had with Donald, that they had to get a game onto shelves somewhere by the end of the financial year. And Queen Games was trying to get a game onto a shelf in Germany, but it was delays in that game that caused them to pull the whole thing down, not the dispute with Donald.
Really? Now, my understanding is that Donald doesn't have the rights to the base game and someone else has the rights. So he has the rights to the expansion, but not to the base game.
Oh,
so he can't then release himself the expansion because of not having the rights to the base
game.
Well,
that's a whole other level of financial risk, actually, releasing it and distributing
so
it yourself.
Very, very interesting.
I've got more news.
Yeah, well, look,
let's go
to some music, a short musical interlude, and come back with more news. Yeah, that track had some Backbone by Ocean Grove, and before that we had Bubs by Wanatrix Point Never and AJ Cook. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with it, Ice Men Cometh. More news, Trent?
Oh, all right, if I have to.
Well, I could play some of my songs for a while.
Okay, more news.
News.
Garth, this one's for you.
Thank you.
The return of an absolute, genuine, 100% classic game, which is being reprinted by Fantasy Flight Games by Rainer Canizia. They've had a lot of success with the reprint of Tigers and Euphrates, and they are now re-releasing, you guessed it, Samurai. Brand new art, new design, newly sculpted pieces. I love this game. It's for up to four players. It takes just 30 minutes. It is very simple and pure math, and I can't see why anybody wouldn't like it.
Oh, God, that 30 minutes feels like an eternity. Oh, I've never had fun playing that game.
It's hitting the table tonight. I've just decided that in the last five seconds.
I think I'm sick.
Okay, another reprint. Rio Grande Games is releasing, or re-releasing, a new version of Elfin Roads, which combines Elfinland with Elfin Gold and Elfin Sea. Now, you might be confusing this with the 1992 Alan Moon game Elfin Land, but no, it's a repackaging of the later game Elfin Roads with those Elfin expansions.
Elfinland being a Spiel des Jahres winner from that year, in fact.
You confused by any of that?
No.
Okay.
No Elfin way.
The creator of Vampire the Masquerade, the RPG, Mark Ryan Hagen, is releasing a brand new RPG system in August to be called I Am Zombie. Players are, wait for it, zombies. Infected with a disease that, while killing you slowly, also grants you various special physical powers, which you use to fight the Center for Disease Control. Brilliant.
Oh, dear.
Okay, bunch of new stuff coming up from Tasty Minstrel. As we said, that game fair, whatever it was called.
Essen. Is Gen coming, Con.
And those, that too. So everyone's releasing all their crap. Steamworks coming from Tasty Minstrel. It's a steampunk-themed worker placement game where players are building devices of increasingly greater complexity, and they're using 2, 3, 4 or more completely interchangeable components to create these different devices. So that sounds interesting because there's a lot of flexibility in that. Stefan Feld's Luna is getting a new edition from Tasty Minstrel. This is a Spieler's Jahres recommendation from 2011, and it's been second-hand copies of this have been going for megabucks on eBay, so that'll put an end to that. Another Spieler's Jahres nomination, Orleans, from this year, is getting a much wider release, unsurprisingly.
This could be quite important into what happens next week, because if Orleans happens to win...
No!
Mark's nose is going to be splattered all over this desk.
Yes, for the upcoming Head Smashathon.
Yes!
Come on, Alicia!
Orleans is described as a bag-building game.
What?
Which basically means you're collecting different tiles with different powers into a bag and you're drawing them at random as part of the game.
So it's not a James Brown-themed game?
Woo! Papa's got a brand new bag!
And moving on. A November release coming up from Stronghold Games, the new Friedman Freese 504.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, a friend of the show...
Rachel.
Aos.
Aos. Them, yes. Both of those two. Them ones.
Talked about this game. It's not so much a board game as much as it is a gaming toolbox, although it's got a bit of a theme to it. It's set amongst parallel worlds where players build a game from various mechanics. Mm. So you can borrow the racing mechanic or a military domination mechanic or a pick-up-and-deliver mechanic and combine them all in up to 504 different combinations.
Yes.
And nothing else is known about it except this really weird-looking cover.
Well, the great thing is it's going to be coming out as an English release. So that's the big news that's happened recently. It's going to be published in English, which...
From Stronghold Games.
For me, anyway, that's going to help me understand what the hell that game's
about.
What
a coincidence that the number of permutations also starts with the letter F.
Friedman Freese.
That's right.
That's his thing. Okay, two more. Munchkin Nightmare Before Christmas.
What?
Anyone?
Right.
Anyone?
What's next?
Oh, come on. Okay, and last of all, who remembers from the heady days of 2012 the doom that came to Atlantic City?
I saw a copy of that in one of our Melbourne friendly local game shops.
Can you just recap the controversy around it?
Oh, basically, the guy took all the money from Kickstarter, moved cities, decided that he'd use that as an investment to fund his extravagant lifestyle, and forgot to actually publish and produce a game out of it.
Eric Chevalier was his name, and he claims that he solicited money from Kickstarter for this game, but then apparently he used it to set up some other game company, although apparently a lot of it just went on rent. Anyway, the US Federal Trade Commission has reached a settlement with this man.
Ooh.
All right, and this just sets a little bit of a precedent around Kickstarter. This was a very high-profile case of a Kickstarter not meeting the terms of its agreement. For his part, Mr. Chevalier neither confirms nor denies the allegations.
Ah,
right, yes. That old chestnut!
Which have led to a judgment of him having to repay $111,793, which is unlikely to ever be collected, since Eric is... he's basically declared the equivalent of bankruptcy.
Yeah, Chapter 11 or something.
And he's not permitted to be involved in any crowdfunding activities for the next 18 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not sure if that includes backing things.
Wow.
Of course, in the meantime, Cryptozoic stepped in and got a lot of good press for actually helping out the backers to that game, The Doom That Came to Atlantic City. And that's the news.
I'm glad we only have to put up with that noise every 3 weeks or so.
That's right. And look, I did even have some, you know, crazy backing tracks and stuff, but he always complains when I play them.
Yes.
So look, let's have some more music, come back and talk about the Dice Tower Awards, because I'm certain that in those awards, there's going to be some space travel.
Woo! The Beastie Boys with Intergalactic You are with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And thank you, Mark, for playing a good song when you had the choice.
I always play good songs.
That was really, really encouraging. I see you developing as a musical person. That's really encouraging. Now, Mark.
I could see him grooving like the Notorious B.I.G. behind the desk.
Yeah. So let's change the subject really quickly. Mark, can you talk about something you do know, which is games, and the recent Dice Tower Awards?
The Dice Tower Awards now, of course, we've just had the Dice Tower Convention in Florida. And
shall we explain what the Dice Tower actually is?
So the Dice Tower is this thing where you tip dice into the top of it, they roll down some baffles. Not that Dice Tower?
The Dice Tower podcasting empire run by Tom Vassell, of course, if you don't already know.
If you're listening, we're still waiting for that email.
Mate, you've been stalking Tom Vassell in cyber stalking space.
It's not called stalking if it's via email, okay? It's an exchange. Anyway, at Dice Tower Con, which is the convention that's grown out of the gaming behemoth that is the Dice Tower Network, they announced their Dice Tower Awards. Now, look, these awards have really been trying to fill a space of a non-Euro award. So I guess an American Spiel des Jahres type things.
Okay.
And so they have a panel of, I don't know if you want to say industry experts, but a whole bunch of people vote on them, industry people vote on them, podcasters, designers, game companies.
But it is only American games.
No. It's just that the Dice Tower is based in America.
Okay.
And they have a nomination system, and then they award the best games, and they have a whole bunch of different categories. And look, what I'm really excited about, actually, is if you look through these awards, and I'll talk through a few different ones, but if you look through them, it is a who's who. Garth?
Turn your mobile phone off.
It is a who's who of games that we've been playing and talking about over the last 12 months. So I'm really excited that there is some indication that we actually sort of know what we're talking about.
I can tell you're genuinely excited.
Yeah. So, look, and let's not go to the really exciting news first up. But a couple of interesting ones. Most innovative game, which I really like this category. Alchemist was in there. One of our favourites, Dead of Winter, was in there. But the winner, Tragedy Looper, which we mentioned before, and I'm really hoping to get a game in, Rachel, if you're listening, at the Hobart Winter Games Fest. Best two-player game, another one we've talked a lot about. Now, we didn't like it, but I think it's because we played the four-player version. And the more I look at this, the more it really is a two-player game that if you stick two decks together, you can play with four. But it's not really meant to be that.
Now, I want to confess here, mm-hmm. because over the last week, I've probably played about 20 games of this on the iPad.
Oh, yeah,
really,
and it is growing on me.
Yeah, well, I've played it on the iPad and played it two players. I do really like it. That's Star Realms. It was the best two-player game. It fought such giants as Imperial Assault and Marvel Dice Masters. But anyway, another Dice Men favourite, Five Tribes, pulled in the best strategy game and beat off Imperial Settlers, another one we like, Kanban, Panamax, and this little game, which I keep seeing mentioned, and I had to do a bit of research today, Xia, Legends of Adrift System.
Yeah, it was a huge Kickstarter, and this is one of those games. It's a space, it's a 4X space exploration game that has everything with the kitchen sink in it in terms of components.
Yeah, it seems to be almost I don't like to say a mini TI3, because you don't have the space empire. You have your own little ship and world where you're going and traveling. It reminded me a bit of the Privateer, that computer game that was set in the Wing Commander universe where you go off and do your own thing decide to trade or get into wars or whatever.
Or even Elite before.
But look, getting back to the winner, Five Tribes, what I really like about it is that it's strategy, but it's also really accessible.
Yes. I actually, because of that, feel that it's the odd one out in this particular category, because the strategy games, you know, Kanban, Panamax, they're very high-end, complex games. And I don't think Five Tribes is quite right sitting alongside them. I'm not saying it's not a good game. Of course, I think Five Tribes deserves to win every award that it can possibly get, but I think it's the odd one out here.
But I think that's possibly why it won, because it's just more across-the-board accessible to a broader spectrum.
Yeah. Star Realms, a game, picked up Best Small Publisher. And again, Zaya was in the nominees for that. The best party game. Now, this one had me scratching my head. Spyfall. But then I realised I had actually played it in the form of an app. I think it must be an unofficial one. That was this game, which is where your group of people, and I think the actual physical game plays up to 8. I think we played it with about 12. Where you're all at a location and every one of you has a job except one person who's a spy. And you ask each other questions. The spy is trying to work out what the location is. The other people are trying to work out who the spy is. And so you have to be particularly vague with your questions and your answers. And locations are as various as a motor garage, a submarine, a cruise liner, a prison.
Yeah,
I think
there's
about 20 different locations.
And the spy is the only one who doesn't have that key bit of information and has to you know, sort of make their answer so vague to try and go along with everybody else. It's a social deduction game. Sounds like a lot of fun. I'd like to try it. One of the nominees in this category for best party game is something that I'd not heard of until tonight looking at this list. Clusterfight. And I just want to know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's move on because there's so much happening with this. Best new designer was Mattis Cotri, who was the designer of Alchemists. Still hanging out to play a full game of that. And in that same category, one of the nominees was Marc Andre for Splendor, which also picked up the best family game, which, thank goodness, it's finally getting some of the recognition that it deserved. Again, our friend of the show, Bruno Cathala, picked up Best Game Artwork for Abyss.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I liked it.
Imperial Settlers was nominated as well, and I think that works
right
better.
Yeah, right in there. And in fact, that was in quite a number of the categories as a nominee. Ticket to Ride, the 10th Anniversary Edition, picked up the Best Game Reprint and had those lovely little carriages with the giraffe sticking out of the top of the zoo carriage. Tuscany, the expansion for Viticulture, picked up Best Game Expansion. And I must admit, I have played Viticulture with some of the Tuscany components in there, and it is beautiful. It's got the lovely little wooden shaped bits. It's got the...
Thank God you didn't talk about the rooster or...
Yeah, that's right. It's got the gold coins. It's got a whole bunch of other things.
Wow.
Best Components went to Star Wars Imperial Assault. And the final two categories that were cleaned up by one of our favourite games and a game we'll talk about a bit more that you can win in our competition coming up, Best Co-op Game and Game of the Year, Dead of Winter, a Crossroads game by Jonathan Gilmore and Isaac Fager.
It also got Best Game Theme, which I think is completely pertinent because it plays that zombie theme really, really well.
Oh, yes.
Now,
yes.
Look, the reason we like to go through the winners of these awards is because, as we've discussed previously on this show, there's like 100, 500 million games released every week these days because we are going through the golden age of board gaming. And you can't play them all.
No.
And you can't go out and buy them all when they first come out, no matter how much the cult of the new might be pressuring you to do that. So the thing to do is to wait around and see what bubbles up to the surface. And I think that these awards are a great way to do that because certainly Dead of Winter, Five Tribes, in this case, Zia, Legends of Adrift System, they're all getting repeat mentions.
Exactly right. And the good thing is the vast majority of them, we can actually just go and buy them now. Which is awesome.
Yes, finally. Because, of course, things do take a wee while to get here from the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, so we've talked about this before. You either dip your toe in at the very, very beginning and just hope that it's going to be a good game, or you wait and see, and now let the whatever rise to the whatever, and now we've got good games.
And because we are paying so much here as well in Australia. Mm.
So, anyway, before we go on some more, as in Dead of Winter, it's time to get back to the shelter.
Segway King!
The dulcet tones of Richard Clapton, Get Back to the Shelter, which, of course, is one of the things you do have to do in Dead of Winter every now and again. You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM on the Dice Men Cometh.
Get back to the shelter of the Best Western Hotel for the middle of winter in Hobart and the Hobart Winter Game Fest. Number 5, part of DICON, coming up on the 8th and 9th of August. We've got more people from the mainland than ever before coming down for our little gaming convention here in Hobart. The Dice Men are going to be there, along with the rest of the Hobart Game Society who are putting it on. 8th and 9th of August, Best Western Hotel. Book yourself a cheap flight and do it. We'll see you there.
Shout out to a couple of my workmates who have been giving me crap all week about being on a radio show. Stuff a lot of you. I'm here in a radio studio. You're at work.
Hey, really, really quickly, can I just do something a little bit different?
Yeah.
I just want to do it like just a little book review.
Ooh. You learned to read.
I know.
Oh.
I'm all about...
It's not a comic.
I'm all about... No, that's right. I'm trying to actually read a real book of fiction, which is something I haven't done seemingly since I was about 12. But look, this has been out a few years, and I think, Mark, you've read this. Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, who is like the uber geek on the internet now. I mean, to give you an example, this guy first came to the world's attention. He put out an unauthorized film script sequel to The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. The book's massively obsessed with video games, but there's a little bit of D&D mixed in there as well. And really, it's
for... It's 80s movies.
Yeah, it's for...
80s music.
For anyone who grew up video games, in that
role-playing
time.
Role-playing games, all those great things.
I've seen it called young adult fiction, but I think it's just for anyone who sort of remembers the 80s, really.
Yeah, and I've had the Uber Nerd edition, where I've listened to the audio book narrated by Will Wheaton.
If he stumbled over a word, did he blame the producer?
Ooh.
And Ernest Cline's new book is coming out a little bit later on this month. And the plot of it sounds very much like The Last Starfighter. He's already sold the film rights to it. Get this, it's called Armada.
Mm.
Nothing to do with the Star Wars game.
At all, no.
Apparently. So Ready Player One, if you haven't read it and you're a gamer geek like us, you're going to love it.
Now, Garth...
Yes.
We've got a competition coming up.
Do we ever. Now, Mark, can I just name some games and you can tell me whether you like these games or not?
Yeah, sure, go.
All right. Love Letter.
Oh, that's a great game.
Coup.
I really love that game.
Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yeah, I've had a bad experience, but I know it's a great game. It depends on who you're playing it with.
I hear it needs a scoring app.
I love the scoring app. And then, how about the best game of the year, according to the Dice Tower Awards, Dead of Winter?
Oh, yes. And you can get back to the shelter.
Exactly right.
Garth, those are all fantastic games. If only there was some way I could win them from my favourite podcast.
Well, we have been very, very fortunate in our great friends, our friendly game shop, Area 52, have decided to help you get these prizes out to our lovely listeners. And all you've got to do...
Is like us.
That's all you got to do.
We don't ask for much.
Now, I feel good about myself, but I don't know about Mark. You like all the likes you can get, don't you?
And I feel terrible about Mark.
Yeah. So all we're going to do, we're going to make this as easy as possible on everyone. We're going to put a post up, and we'll put it up after we've released the podcast. So
on the Facebooks.
Exactly right, on the Book of Faces. And all you've got to do is like it. It'd also be really, really good if you decided to maybe share it with some friends and they decided to like it, because everyone will get some entries by doing that.
Hang on, Garth.
Technically, you're not allowed to. No. It's in Facebook's rules.
Terms and conditions, absolutely. Zuckerberg will be honest like a ton of bricks. So
we can't
ask you to share it.
Well, we can't write on Facebook that you want us to share it.
Okay.
So anyway, I plead ignorance.
Be it on your own head if you share it. Yes, please.
And we'll do this for the next 4 weeks.
Next 4 weeks, and there'll be a massive behemoth of a draw where those four amazing games will be won.
All this competition needs is a funky name.
Okay. Mark, have you got any suggestions?
Because
I've got one.
I'm coming up dry.
Okay.
No,
Trent?
I can't think of anything.
All right, you ready? No. I've worked on this all week. It is the shameless self-promotion promotion!
Yay!
Just like us on Facebook to go into the draw for any of those games.
And we're going to go. We'll be back next week. Look out for the Facebooks for the competition.
And like us.
No. Coarse language warning.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.